You're listening to KPMG's podcast series on topics you should be discussing with your head of tax. I'm Tony Castellanos, partner and U.S. tax practice leader for our industry sectors. On each episode, I'll interview one of KPMG's tax leaders for a specific industry to hear their perspectives about key industry developments and the associated tax implications affecting your decisions. We're glad to have you join us. Today, I'm joined by Dean Kamihaly, Principal and KPMG Technology Industry Tax Leader, and Hannah Hawkins, a Principal with the Credits and Incentives Group in our Washington National Tax Practice. Dean, Hannah, welcome to the podcast.
Great to be back, Tony.
So today, we'll be focusing on the technology industry, but with particular focus around the CHIPS Act and the Inflation Reduction Act that was recently enacted. Dean, you can provide a little bit of an overview, and then we'll get into a couple of specific questions.
Sure, Tony. The CHIPS Act is a piece of legislation that was enacted on August 9. It's a piece of legislation that's really designed to encourage the research and manufacture of semiconductors in the U.S. So, you know, obviously a number of different drivers behind this, but key of which is U.S. industrial policy and the desire to bring jobs and manufacturing into the U.S., as well as to secure the supply chain. There are a number of provisions in this piece of legislation, but one of the headline provisions, which I'm sure we'll be talking about, is a 25% investment tax credit for qualified property that is part of an advanced manufacturing facility. The second piece of legislation we wanted to talk about is the so-called Inflation Reduction Act, which was enacted about a week after the CHIPS Act on August 16, 2022. And there are a number of headline provisions in this act as well, including a 15% corporate AMT and a 1% excise tax on stock buybacks. But of particular importance for today is some of the climate change incentives and provisions in this act that provide extensions for existing production tax credits and investment tax credits, or provide new incentives for various climate change initiatives. So lots to talk about today.
Yeah, and that last one, I mean, there is a significant impact to the energy and power and utilities industry, but we're gonna keep this conversation to the implications to tech, and there's a little bit of an intersection there, as we'll see as we get into the conversation. And again, to recap, these two pieces of legislation were basically back-to-back and essentially just happened. So Hannah, maybe we can get a little bit deeper into the CHIPS Act first, and then a little bit onto the Inflation Reduction Act. What would you say the bigger drivers are in terms of the implications for the tech industry?
It's the incentives, right? And it's the impacts on the decision-making for the industry. Prior to the CHIPS Act, there was not a government-provided economic incentive to make sure that you're doing your chip component manufacturing in the U.S. And now there are not only various grants and loan guarantees throughout the CHIPS Act, there is now this tax credit too. And you know, the conversations I'm having with clients, it's reorienting the way they're thinking about their investments, the timing of their investments, obviously the location of their investments. It's an important conversation, and every company who's in the chip space, you know, whether they are directly eligible for the credit, meaning that they are chip manufacturers or manufacturers of chip manufacturing equipment, or they're farther down the supply chain, the impact of these incentives will be felt by the industry as a whole, and everybody is thinking about the way that to position themselves to benefit.
And there were a number of companies basically in advance of the legislation that were already considering plans to build manufacturing plants in the U.S., some really high-profile companies that started to do that. So there's clearly momentum that was beginning to build before the legislation, and now that will continue. So companies were getting ahead of it. The legislation itself doesn't answer every question that executives in these companies and those thinking about it will have. So what are the questions that are out there about the legislation, the CHIPS Act in particular, that companies in the tech sector would be asking themselves to sort this out?
Numerous questions. Sometimes the statutory language can be hard to parse and, you know, hard to fit your facts into. So I think that The top line question for a lot of these companies will be, do I qualify? A lot of the conversations I have with companies is, I know that I'm in the chips business. I know what I do. I know what my company does, but how does this affect me? And so I think there is a bit of determining right now, again, eligibility for not just the tax credit that's available, but also some of these grants and how do they fit in with each other. And then there's also sort of determination of making decisions because people want to sort of accelerate these benefits too. The CHIPS credit is available for projects placed in service starting next year. And so people are looking at their CapEx and their plans and maybe accelerating some projects or maybe putting the brakes on other projects as to not lose out on some of these benefits. But again, it's, you know, we get new legislation. The language is tough. We don't have any guidance yet. And who knows how long IRS guidance takes. So there's a lot of grasping right now, but it's important. It's very real-time decision-making with not a lot of information.
I think it's important for people who aren't in the semiconductor industry to understand that there are a lot of components and machines and equipment that go into semiconductor manufacturing, and it's quite a long supply chain. So as Hannah points out, there really are a lot of questions as to how far down this credit is going to extend into the supply chain. Presumably, it covers things like wafer fabrication and lithography and etching equipment. But what about assembly, saws, dies, and wire bonders? What about testing on the back end? There are just a lot of unknowns as to how far down this can go. And the supply chain does go pretty deep. So it's a big question.
The CHIPS Act itself essentially covers two categories, right? Those that manufacture semiconductors and then those that manufacture the equipment that the semiconductors manufacturers use, right? I mean, that's where the deep supply chain comes in. Is that what you're saying, Dave?
That's exactly it, Tony.
So what about, how do these credits and incentives work? You mentioned grants, there's credits. What are they? Just, you know, unpack the type of incentives that exist under the Act.
In terms of the non-tax incentives, there's identified allocated funding for things like grants or loan guarantees. There is a good deal of overlap, of course, with what the grants incentivize and what the tax credit incentivize. And it's, again, it's the manufacturing in this space. Again, what the credit specifically incentivizes is the investments in a manufacturing facility that manufactures chips or manufactures the manufacturing equipment. And what's interesting about what the credit incentivizes that's unique in this type of credit is that it not only incentivizes the investments in the equipment, but it also incentivizes the buildings. And from what I understand in this industry, the manufacturing facilities are very specially designed to support the manufacturing activity. The spend on the facility itself, the building, the structural components is a very interesting feature of this tax credit and potentially makes the tax credit much, much richer too.
So the grants are, I'll put that in the money today, money in hand, right? As opposed mm-hmm. to credits, which are an offset to a tax that a company might pay. Is that a fair way to characterize those two?
That's fair, except Tony, there's a new feature with the CHIPS tax credit, whereby you can just claim the credit against your tax liability on your return, like a normal tax credit. Or you can elect to treat your tax credit as a refundable tax credit. And how that basically works, it's what's called a direct pay election, meaning you can elect to treat the amount of credit you're otherwise eligible as a payment of tax that is applied against your tax liability, if any, with any excess available as a refund. This is a sort of a brand new feature in the federal tax credit space. And when CHIPS was first enacted, it was very, very unique to the CHIPS credit. But now that feature has also been added to some of the credits that are in the Inflation Reduction Act. So this refundable tax credit feature makes the value of the tax credit to organizations different depending on your tax position. And previously, the way that companies that didn't have tax capacity often had to monetize these tax credits was to enter into partnerships with what's called tax equity partners, where they could allocate the credits to a partner that had tax capacity, thereby receiving some financial benefit for those tax credits. But this ability to claim them as refundable tax credits is a more efficient way to incentivize and will make this more valuable for many, many players.
Hannah, are there any questions open as it relates to that refundability? Could there be some qualifications to that, or is it, you know, as simple as you just described?
You mean, is it too good to be true? No, there will definitely be guidance coming out to clarify how this is supposed to work. And I think the big question that is floating around and that has is concerning to people is, what will the timing be like? Say I place in service my manufacturing facility next year, I file my return for 2023, then I have to wait for a refund. Is that refund claim going to be audited? Will that refund claim be reviewed by the Joint Committee on Taxation? Will I have to provide some sort of upfront certification or information to the IRS in order to get my refund? And how long will this all take? I mean, I needed that money yesterday, right? So definitely questions around process and timing are out there, and guidance will be needed to clarify these processes.
And timing on that guidance, any idea?
I would like to say that timing in the IRS is like dog years. You know, if they say it's a few weeks away, we could be talking about many, many months. But I think they understand how much attention these incentives are receiving, you know, not just from the people in these industries, but from the economy at large, the supply chain at large. And so I think there is going to be some prioritization of this type of guidance. I understand that there is guidance in the works to request comments from the industry on the CHIPS credit and on some of the Inflation Reduction Act credits. The wheels are turning, but it's always slow.
It's definitely on the radar. Dean, with a little bit of that as background, what are you seeing or perhaps expecting in the tech sector to evolve as a result of the CHIPS Act?
Well, Tony, we're clearly seeing a lot of activity around taking a look at this incentive and seeing it, whether it makes sense. We had a pretty large announcement of a $100 billion facility going into New York. We do also see companies still sort of sitting back and sort of looking to see how this plays out. One thing I should mention about the CHIPS Act and the ability to claim credits is that there is a limitation placed on it, which is if you do claim the ITC, you are not able to make a subsequent investment in China or any other foreign country of concern, as that is to be defined within 10 years of placing the facility in service. And so that does put significant limitations on what you do in the future. Now, it may very well be worth it for you to move forward, but I think this is one of those things where you really need to consider the benefit of a 25% ITC in the context of your broader CapEx plans. And so we do see a lot of companies still sort of sitting back and taking a look at those plans, perhaps revising them and trying to figure out whether this makes sense for them in the long term.
Right. That's a really significant point and a significant constraint. This credit, the ITC, is not available just to U.S. companies, but to those that are investing in the U.S., correct?
That's right.
So that brings, geopolitics, obviously, into this. In 10 years, is a very long time. And what we know and see and feel today on the political stage could be very different, you know, even 2 years from now. So that's a very significant thing that you're calling out, Dean. What about in terms of financing structures? Do these credits and incentives change that landscape a bit? Do you foresee other investors maybe getting involved where they otherwise wouldn't have as a result of this legislation?
Well, I can certainly see an impact to financing structures. You know, whether or not that brings in other investors, I think remains to be seen. But I think one of the points Hannah made about there still being some uncertainty around how and to what extent the refunds will be administered still puts a significant amount of uncertainty about how all these projects are ultimately going to come together and be financed.
And would you see M&A activity perhaps being impacted or built up from a momentum standpoint or decreased as a result of this?
It certainly could. I think because there is quite a bit of uncertainty around how the refund mechanism would work, I think it's difficult to anticipate right now what companies would do. I think once we get more guidance in that area, it'll become clearer what the right path is.
So how about an intersection here between the CHIPS Act and the Inflation Reduction Act? Are there any issues here that you want to point out in terms of complexities between the two that there could be some intersections on? The one thing that comes to mind for me is the corporate AMT in the Inflation Reduction Act and perhaps competing a bit with the notion of building out plants and getting credits.
I think as with any tax benefit, it is the wrong approach to just focus on the tax benefit itself. You really have to look at the totality of a taxpayer's tax posture to see what the net impact will be. And certainly with the new corporate AMT, which is going to impact a lot of things, looking at that as well as all of the other tax provisions that might affect a taxpayer just to see what the net impact, the net benefit of an ITC might be. If, for example, with the CHIPS Act, you claim that the 25% ITC, there is also a commensurate reduction with depreciable basis. And I think it's important to sort of roll all that through an appropriate model to be sure you have a good handle on what the net financial statement and net cash tax benefit will be for your company.
Anna, any thoughts on that?
We're seeing companies, as Dean alluded to, understanding now that they have to take a bigger look at, you know, not just the impact of their investment in their potentially tax credit qualifying activity, but the impact those investments have in the results of those investments have on their overall tax posture, including now with the imposition of the minimum tax.
So let's continue down the path on the Inflation Reduction Act as it relates to the green initiatives, Hannah. Tell us a little bit about those.
Sure, Tony. What the Inflation Reduction Act did on the green incentive provisions is it basically extended and modified many of the existing incentives that have been out there. For example, those for things like investments in solar or wind. And then it also added new incentives for technologies and activities that have never before been incentivized. Newer technologies, things like the production of clean hydrogen, for example. And it takes these credits and modifies them too in ways that are interesting in that there are now requirements in order to get the highest amount of credit. You have to pay prevailing wage labor and use qualified apprenticeships. So it's not only trying to incentivize investments in these technologies, but trying to create good paying job markets in these areas. And there's also woven throughout the incentives in the Inflation Reduction Act opportunities to get even a higher credit for things like locating your project in certain targeted geographical areas, and also for using domestic content in the construction of your projects. So, for example, if you construct a solar project using domestically manufactured solar panels, then you can potentially get even more credit under your solar investment tax credit. And to sort of support that provision, there are new manufacturing incentives specifically targeted to the manufacturing of things like solar panels in the U.S. So it's an interesting bill in that there's a lot of policy, not just the obvious policy in incentivizing certain technologies, but there's a lot of other policy woven throughout here, including domestic supply chain and workforce. And then finally, a change that was made to these credits in the Inflation Reduction Act is that, like the CHIPS credit, some of these credits were made refundable using that same mechanism. And then the ones that weren't made refundable are now transferable, meaning that you can sell your credits to third parties. And transferable federal tax credits is a totally new thing, and we're still trying to figure out how this is going to work. It's different, and again, it's meant to sort of level the playing field for taxpayers on these incentives, not penalizing anyone for not having the tax capacity to use these tax incentives.
That transferability piece, Hannah, does have a potential of creating a little cottage industry. We've seen that with state and local incentives that are transferable, and perhaps the same could happen here to facilitate that transferability. But we'll see how that evolves, I guess.
Yeah, we're all sort of wondering how it's going to evolve, and will it evolve the same way that some of these state programs have? There's some differences with the rules in the Inflation Reduction Act related to the federal credits, and that you can only transfer it once, and cash received by the seller is an income and things like that. But it, absolutely, some sort of cottage industry will pop up around this. And that is, you know, to be determined how that looks, and also, you know, how these credits will be priced. Are we talking 90 cents on the dollar, 50 cents on the dollar? You know, what sort of discount will the market demand?
Right, exactly. Dean, where do you see the tech industry playing into the Inflation Reduction Act, and in particular, the green incentives that Hannah just pointed out?
in many cases, tech companies are not going to be directly involved in some of the things that generate these incentives, but certainly will be indirectly involved. We have a number of companies that have invested in utility scale solar and wind farms in the past, and this will certainly affect companies that want to continue to make those investments, but also for companies that are building out green fleets of vehicles or alternative energy, a whole slew of different things that will ultimately have impact for tech companies that are pursuing various green initiatives within the company. One other thing I wanted to point out are the tangible benefits associated with credits and, in some cases, deductions. But there are also a lot of intangible benefits, which I think the tech sector will likely latch onto. Tech companies are starting to report out their environmental, social, and governance profiles. And this clearly is going to have an impact on their profile and their reporting. Hopefully for the better. You know, in many cases, the intangible benefits of some of these investments may outweigh some of the tangible benefits associated with credits and deductions.
So, Dean, I want to pick up on something based on what you just said. I'm thinking about the workforce planning, sustainable, qualified, trained people to be able to do all the work that's necessary, especially if you're building new plants to manufacture, whether it be semiconductors, equipment for semiconductor manufacturing, or even the alternative energy production that Hannah mentioned. Is there anything in these two pieces of legislation that incentivizes workforce training so that you have qualified resources to devote to all this manufacturing that we want to take place or want to have take place in the U.S.?
Well, certainly with the climate change provisions, there are a number of incentives that don't just incentivize training folks, but essentially require it in order to maximize or in some cases get the credit at all. So, for example, with some of the credits around qualified advanced energy property and in other areas, I believe there are prevailing wage and apprenticeship requirements that you must meet in order to get the maximum credit. So I think the answer to your question is yes.
Basically, what you're saying is that if there aren't specific incentives, and by the way, state and local governments may have those incentives as well in terms of attracting workers to or creating jobs within their jurisdictions. But to qualify for some of the incentives that we've been talking about in the federal legislation, you would have to do the same in order to get those credits. You'd have to train and have qualified workforce to do the work that's necessary.
That's right.
I saw a map recently of where, you know, there's targeted manufacturing for semiconductors, and many of these companies are going to have to invest in training locally to attract the workforce to those plants. It's a very tight labor market as it is. So finding qualified resources is going to require training people to do the job. Hannah, any thoughts on that topic from you?
Just to pick up on the prevailing wage and apprenticeship requirements, like, you know, although that's not, I guess, an incentive directly for investments made in training, it certainly requires that there are trained workers in the relevant fields, right? If you're a contractor and you can't staff a job with trained workers, then you're not going to get those contracts. And I think it's a really interesting feature of the requirements in the Inflation Reduction Act's tax credits to have that requirement, because it will be impactful, not just on the credit generating property itself, but the surrounding workforce, the surrounding geographic area. It's a really interesting feature and one we're all sort of watching closely in terms of how, you know, IRS will require that those requirements are complied with in terms of documentation and the ways in which developers and companies contract with their contractors and subcontractors are affected by it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what that documentation will be, and clearly something that will be examined upon audit by the IRS. So it's a new chapter that we'll turn to as these credits and incentives begin to get used and reported. Hey, I can ask both of you questions for hours, but maybe just as the last topic here, just big picture, what are the top operational considerations that you would suggest our listeners, the companies they work for, the management teams, to consider as it relates to both the CHIPS Act and the Inflation Reduction Act?
I think the number one operational consideration is that you really need to get the tax department and your tax advisors integrated into projects early and often. And this may seem like an obvious thing because we're talking about credits and deductions here, which are our tax items. But in many or most instances, I think these projects are going to originate outside of the tax department because they involve large CapEx expenditures. And as is sometimes the case, the tax department gets brought in towards the back end to comply with the various rules and regulations. But I think this is one instance where the tax department can really provide value to a company to help maximize the amount of benefits, to maximize the amount of qualifying property for credits, and to be sure that the various requirements are met. So again, get the tax department involved at the onset and not on the back end.
Great point. Anna, anything additional from you on that topic?
Not just to be such a tax person and echo Dean, but absolutely getting tax involved early in the process is important. And it's sort of playing out in real time in the way that companies are looking at these incentives. Nobody wants to leave any of these opportunities on the table, and they want to understand all these opportunities. And oftentimes that's going to mean having the tax people and the operations people or the sustainability people or whoever it may be in the room together to make sure everyone is on the same page and everyone understands the importance of various eligibility requirements and timing. I mean, to footfall on one of these opportunities could cost millions. Often Congress is using the tax code to implement policy, and these tax credits are an example of that. This is how the money is being spent in many cases. So making sure that the tax rules line up with what operations is doing is super important.
So basically, tax involved upfront to help make the decision. That'll include modeling, Dean, and you made that point earlier, but also involved during the execution of that plan, right, to make sure that there's monitoring happening while that credit is live and being used over the lifetime of a particular project and the outcome of that project. And then obviously on the back end, in working with the IRS and other regulators to make sure that those credits are sustained after they're reported. So there's a lot here to do. There's a lot to be decided. And there's a lot still left to be understood, as you mentioned, Hannah and Dean, in terms of guidance that's coming out. This has been a great conversation. Hopefully our listeners are going to benefit from this. And we will definitely revisit this topic in a few months as additional guidance comes out and as more companies begin to seek opportunities to be able to put these benefits to work for them. So thank you both very much.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the KPMG podcast series on industry tax developments. Thank you for tuning in, and we look forward to speaking to you next time.